Hello and welcome to Speaking with Carl Thornton Jr. Glad we're together as we continue our exploration of ways to deal with ADHD. So here's your pop quiz, ladies and gentlemen. What is the primary difference between ADHD and ADD? ADHD and ADD. All right, now, a lot of you know that. I mean, you answered the question almost before I finished asking it. And for those of you who are saying, I know the answer, I just can't quite get it. Okay, let me give you this clue. Here we go. Here's the clue. I'm simply going to give you the breakdown of the acronyms. ADHD stands for Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder. All right, you got that. Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder. ADD stands for Attention Deficit Disorder. ADD, Attention Deficit Disorder. Okay, so here's the deal. ADHD includes the hyperactive component. There's a problem focusing, attention deficit. There's also a problem, and I mean a serious problem, with hyperactivity. Remember now, these are disorders. So this isn't just the normal thing that you would see in a young child. Have a lot of energy that needs to be burned. And that's for real. Children tend to have more energy than adults. And that's not to say that adults don't need to be moving. We all need to be moving regardless of our ages. But children have even more energy, generally speaking, than adults do. And so they've got to burn it. One of the worst things we can do with energy is keep it pent up. Keep it locked in. It needs to be released. There's a lot of benefit to releasing that energy, expressing that energy in constructive ways. And so we're not talking about the child who really, really likes to run, the child who really likes to jump and climb, the child who really likes to slide down the sliding board. Mm-mm. We're not talking about the child who really loves to swing, just jump on the swing, kick those legs, and swing as high as they can. No, those are the kinds of things children should be doing. It helps them release that energy that's inside their bodies and souls. Now, we're talking about the person who, when they should be able to sit still while the teacher is discussing this with the entire class, this child can't sit still. They've got to move at inappropriate times for people their age. Their peers find it easy to sit still while the teacher is going over this, going over that. But this particular child has just got to be moving, crawling in out of the circle. The children have circled up. They formed a circle on the floor like the teachers asked them to while she teaches them something. She sits in the circle too. And she's reading to them. She's demonstrating something for them. All the other five-year-olds are sitting in that circle calmly and focused on what the teacher's talking about. But every 2 minutes, this one five-year-old is getting out of his space and he's trying to crawl his way in between these two classmates, and he goes through the middle of the circle and tries to crawl through in between two more classmates. Finally, after the teacher says, okay, now you need to get back, finds his way back to his hole in the circle, his spot in the circle, sits down, fidgets for a little while, and gets on the move again, jumps up and runs over to the water fountain. We're talking about a child who really has a difficult time sitting still when the child should be able to sit still, according to the developmental level of people his or her age, usually his, because when it's attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, as a lot of you heard me say before, generally speaking, it tends to be the boys who move a lot when they have ADHD. And I'm laughing because it's kind of funny, but it's kind of not funny, too. I know it can be very, very challenging for the teacher. He or she is really trying to teach the children, and there's all this distraction because little Johnny has such a difficult time sitting still so that everyone can focus on what Teacher Susie is teaching. And Teacher Susie sends out a notice to little Johnny's parents, and it gets stressful for them because they just don't know what's going on. And finally, testing is done by the physician, by little Johnny's doctor, and lo and behold, it is discovered that little Johnny has ADHD. And so we got to deal with that. So we talked about ways that, you know, we talked about medication before, and I know some of you are waiting for that. Stay with us. I want us to first, let's kind of review what we've already talked about. Keeping this in mind, that one of the things I want you to consider doing is doing your research, find out what kind of diet, what kind of eating habits may be helpful for children who have ADHD. And talk with your physician, see if, you know, write down what you discover. Print it out, however you want to do it. Take that information to your physician. And you all talk about that. See if you might want to implement any of your findings. For example, as I've mentioned before, some parents have talked about how getting a lot of artificial dyes out of the mix has helped their children tremendously. All right, so just think about those things. Now, in the meantime, let's get back to some of the list of ideas shared by Medical News Today, as they talk about some of the things that we can do, that parents can do, in helping their children who have ADHD. And again, some of these are going to, you know, a lot of this is going to have to do with what you have the power to do right there in your home. All right. Now, one of the things we talked about is the importance of keeping it interesting. So, you want to make sure that what you're talking about is something that will be interesting so that it really draws your child's attention. Remember, one of the things that they struggle with is focusing, remaining attentive, paying attention. One of the things that can help them pay attention and maintain their focus is to be engaged in something that they find interesting. Now, along with that, make sure you encourage your child to exercise. Why the exercise? Exercise can go a long way towards helping a child focus. But remember this, we're talking about focus. Who remembers what we want to avoid specifically when it comes to focus? There you go. We want to help the child avoid becoming hyper-focused. That's the opposite of distractibility. And that's when the child is so focused that they're unaware of their surroundings. We don't want our children to be so focused that they become unaware of their surroundings. Yeah, we want to find that middle ground. Help them learn to be focused. We also recommended giving them praise and encouragement. Any good behavior should be reinforced with praise. I know sometimes we want to think about other rewards as well. And sometimes, for example, parents may, you know, consider giving the child some type of food reward, some candy or some type of food, some chips, whatever. Well, you may not want that to be a first resort. You may want food to be a last resort because from a psychological perspective, we don't want our children to begin to learn that when I do good, I eat. when I do well, I reward myself with food because that may cause them unintentionally and maybe even subconsciously, without intending to do it though, to develop poor eating habits. Sometimes, you know, sometimes it, if we do that within reason, in other words, every now and then, we reward ourselves with some kind of good food, with some kind of food that we just like, even if it's not particularly healthy for us, if it doesn't harm us, if it doesn't do damage to us, to eat it once in a while, well, every once in a while. And so you may want to do that with your child. Every once in a while, reward them with some kind of food, whether that's ice cream, whether it's cake, whether it's a full course meal at a restaurant of the child's choice. Every once in a while. But make the frequent rewards be something that is not food-based. That may mean coming up with ways to come up with a system where you have your board, a very attractive board, where you pin up something that means something to the child, whether animals, butterflies of different colors, you name it. Some kind of reward system where each time this goes up, boom, they do well. This goes on the day of the week that they performed well. Make room for two or three rewards per day to go on that rewards board, accomplishment board, achievement board. Call it something that means something to the child. And if you do that for the child who has ADHD and you have other children, make sure that you're developing a reward system for everyone else because it's going to be meaningful to all of them. It just may pay bigger dividends for the child with ADHD who will need even more help in dealing with the ADHD in addition to dealing with all the stuff that children without any kind of disorder have to contend with. All right, so keep it interesting. Give praise and encouragement. And with the praise and encouragement, I do want to encourage you, parents. Don't necessarily wait until your child has done something huge. I mean, something that makes a tremendous difference. I mean, this was just amazing. Definitely reward your child when that kind of situation comes up, but also when a less significant achievement takes place. Praise and encourage the child for that as well. And try to remember something else that we talked about years ago after we had had one of our guests on the program. And she talked about ways to help our children, particularly in school. And one of the things she pointed out is that it's so important that we not praise the child by saying, "You are such a good child." No, let the child know the child is a good person regardless. When the child is doing well, "Hey, you're a good child. I really appreciate you." The child is messing up. "Hey, you're a good child. We just need to help you get it together." And so specifically then, when a child does well, you're praising the child's behavior. You're simply expressing love and support when you let the child know the child is precious. Period. Period. Even when the child is messing up, and I mean they're on a roll messing up, the child is precious. Your child is precious. Affirm your child. Confirm that he or she is precious, period. But when they've done well, specifically praise that behavior. You're continually affirming your child's self-worth. You're continually affirming the fact that God made your child, and because God made your child, the child is precious. We adults continue to be precious when we mess up, don't we? All right, affirm your child. But you don't want your child to develop the mindset that whenever they're doing well, they're a good person. Whenever they're doing poorly, they're a bad person. You don't want your child to develop the mindset that their behavior determines their identity. Because then their behavior will subconsciously, within their own minds, even if it's deep down where they can't really see it, their behavior will determine whether they are a good person or a bad person. You don't want that to happen, because that the revolving, that vicious cycle can kick in. You know, they do badly and they wonder if they're a bad person. They do badly again and they wonder again if they're a bad person. They do badly again and they begin to think, well, maybe I am a bad person. They do badly again and, wow, man, I think I am a bad person. They do bad and they're on a roll. And so one day, it may be months later, it may be a couple of years later, they conclude, I am a bad person. And once they conclude that they are a bad person, even if they don't realize it, they will find themselves trying to fulfill that conclusion. You all know in psychology they call it the self-fulfilling prophecy. They conclude that they're a bad person. Then they're going to start putting out energy to prove to themselves that their conclusion is correct. And then they're going to make it a point to keep messing up so that it will be clear, yep, I am indeed a bad person. That's why I ask you not to say to them when they're doing well, oh, you're such a good child, you're such a good boy, you're such a good girl. That is affirming their worth as a person. You are good. How many of you have figured out that with adults, we are a lot of us are generally good people, even though we from time to time do bad things? Now, don't get me wrong. There are some bad people in this world. I've said this before. There are people in this world who are truly bad people. The Creator has made it clear in the Word of God. There are people who are considered bad. There are people who are considered wicked. There are people who are considered evil. There are people who are considered, and they are called evil, wicked, worthless. These are words that the Creator uses to describe people. Very rarely does he use terms like that to describe children. It's usually adults who are living these kinds of lifestyles that the Creator says are evil or wicked or worthless. The Lord Jesus called some of the religious leaders who were really just habitually doing bad things. He called them snakes and vipers. There are bad people in this world, so I want to make it clear to you, I'm not suggesting that there is no such thing as a bad person. There are people who are bad. But our focus right now is on our children. And so I'm asking you not to train your child to equate their behavior with who they are as a person. Try not to equate their behavior with their core. Now, there's no question that some children, for whatever reason, whether it's something they've had passed into them at the time of inception, whether something about their environment at an early age began to influence them. There are children who have bad seed in them from childhood. And as they get older, that seed develops as the child develops, and that seed gets worse and worse. There are some children who really are a mess. By and large, we want our children to adjust their thinking, adapt their thinking, modify their thinking. I'm going to be a good person. I just have to get my act together. I need to get my behavior together. To teach them, hey, you know what? And it's okay to be honest with our children. You can say to them, you know what? Your behavior is really frustrating me. At times, it's their attitude that is frustrating. Let them know, your attitude is really frustrating me right now. We need to work together to help you get your attitude together so that you can then get your behavior together. But until you get your attitude together, your behavior is not going to change. You've got to change your attitude first. And sometimes there's something happening in the core of the child that needs to be dealt with. And so again, as I've shared with you before, sometimes we really need to get professional help. And so if you notice that there's something really heavy duty happening with your child at an early age, and it is persistent, and you try different approaches to help your child change, and that the change doesn't come, you may want to seek the advice, the consult of a professional. All right. Provide structure. This is something else we talked about. Provide structure. People need structure. Children need structure. Especially children with ADHD need structure. We talked about the importance of encouraging exercise. We also talked about the importance of training your child to practice good sleep hygiene, good sleep habits. All right, that constitutes our review. I know that I went a little bit more in depth in some of those reviews and injected some things this time around that I did not discuss before, but I thought it was important. I thought it was necessary for us to include that info. So that being the case, when we come back, let's start to take a look at some of the strategy that we haven't discussed yet. You've heard me talk about one of these previously in a different topic, but this is something that we started on this the last time, but didn't finish it. So we're going to get back to the breakdown in just a few.